it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Look, we'll get back to the phones. Lions fans feeling good today. It's a victory Monday, but we have our overreact gyms, college and pros, and we'll start in college. Do me.
Okay, then.
Notre Dame season is done. They are not making the playoff, even if they went out and go 10-2. They don't have a conference title game guarantee, and the only notable power opponent left is USC.
I'm not going to say, I think this is a little bit of an overreaction, only because I don't know that there is a college football powerhouse this year. There's going to be a lot of losses throughout the course of the season. Georgia could have lost to Tennessee. Tennessee may run the table. I don't think so, but I don't know that there's a powerhouse. So I'm not going to say that they're done. It's going to be extremely hard, but a 10-2 Notre Dame team probably finds a way in.
Yeah, I think this is a major overreaction. I agree exactly what John just said. 10-2 gets them in. I've heard a lot of people say a 10-2 Michigan is in the playoff always. The power brands will almost always make the playoff with just two losses.
Speaking of Georgia, the Bulldogs are going to win the SEC. They went into Tennessee, took the Vols' best shot. Gunnar Stockton grew up, came alive, and won that football game. They'll host Bama and Texas. They'll be in the SEC title, and they'll win it.
So it's actually interesting that they host. Their next game is hosting Bama. And what do we make of Bama? I don't really know. They obviously took care of business against Wisconsin, but doesn't really mean a lot. Auburn's a little bit of a surprise. It was at Auburn. So, I'm not going to say that they are the SEC champs. It's way too early. There's way too much more college football. And again, there's no dominant team.
This is not an overreaction because I've got Georgia versus Ohio State in the national championship game. And I just think it's a foregone conclusion already. The problem with Georgia right now is surprisingly the defense.
Yeah.
I like the odds of Kirby Smart fixing Georgia's defense throughout the season. They will win the SEC.
In addition to being a creep, he's a moron. This is Luke Fickell's last year in Madison. Buyout's going to be $25 million. I know it's a lot, but you have to make a decision. What kind of program do you want to be? Do you want to go further down the drain? He's a 500 coach with no identity. They have 5 ranked games remaining on the schedule. They will fire him this season.
What's
the hesitation?
Well, the hesitation is he's shown he can win. Now, it's been a long time. He's been in Madison long enough. And I think that if they were going to do it, they should have done it as soon as he said, yeah, we're going to go with an air raid offense. Like, okay, that's a fireable offense. This is the first year of their new offense. They lost their quarterback just like they did last year in the opening game. I wouldn't be surprised, but I think it's an overreaction. And I think it is simply because of the buyout. $25 million, like Doug has said from 10 to 2, that's $25 million worth of players.
Yeah, I think this is an overreaction right now. I totally see where you're at. I just think it's premature a year early. Like, I think he's going to get a fourth year. His contract's through 2031. You know, he was a great hire, allegedly, by them at the time. They do have Ohio State, Oregon, Michigan, and Illinois on their schedule. It could get ugly. 7-5, 6-6.
That's what I'm saying. The Texas Longhorns won't win double-digit games. From preseason number one to at least 3 losses this year. I know they won this weekend, but Arch Manning, 9 straight incomplete passes, booed by the home crowd. He finished 11-25 for 114 yards. He might be hurt. He might not be very good. Either way, Texas will lose at least 2 more games. They play at Florida, at Georgia, and they have rivals Oklahoma and Texas A&M who have looked good.
And don't forget about that Vandy game. I don't know that Vandy is a team that beats them, but it's if you're not going to get really good quarterback play, then you're opening yourself up to they've already got 1 loss. They only have to lose 2 more for this to be true. I don't necessarily think this is an overreaction right now.
Yeah, I don't think this is an overreaction either. Like you said, with Florida, they got Oklahoma. I mean, I don't know how they would beat Oklahoma and Georgia right now. So therefore, that's 9-3. Now, can it happen? They can beat Oklahoma, of course. But I got to see Arch do it on the road before I believe that they're still going to be maybe even a playoff team.
It's the proper thickness and length. The Colts will win the AFC South. Daniel Jones throwing for 300 yards, leading the game-winning drive. The division's wide open, and they're off to a 2-0 start.
I need to see the Houston Texans play again.
Tonight?
Yeah. And, I mean, we get the beautiful two Monday night games, which I think is awesome. One that starts at 7 o'clock, the other one at 10. So
I don't like it.
I know you don't. But
I like the one-game stage.
I like more football.
Carroll and Harbaugh's at 10 o'clock at night.
I get more football, so stop it. I think this is an overreaction at this point. I don't think Houston is going to be that bad. I'm not really sure what to make of Jacksonville. I think they're going to get better, so this is an overreaction at this point.
Yeah, overreaction for now. I see where you're going. They have the best point differential in the NFL at +26. The other reasoning to say this could be true is that they did it against Denver's defense.
Yeah.
Denver's supposed to have a good defense. But yeah, I'm with John. I want to see the Texans tonight because I think the Texans could have a potentially great defense.
Do you believe? Spiciest one. The Kansas City Chiefs will miss the playoffs. Look, the odds suggest it. 88% of the time you start 0-2, you don't make the postseason. And let's really look under the hood here. They're going to play the Ravens and Lions before Rashi Rice comes back. Mahomes can't be their leading rusher if they're going to be a playoff team. And they've generated little to no offense while generating little to none on the turnover front. They're just not very good right now.
Well, and I mean, we talk about the Lions schedule being tough. Obviously, playing at the Giants doesn't really scare anyone, but they do have the Ravens, obviously, with the Lions, Commanders, Bills on the road, the Broncos defense. I'm going to say this is an overreaction at this point because I'm not going to throw Patrick Mahomes under the bus just yet. But remember, in my playoff thing, I had him as a wild card team and losing in the first round. So I think they make it. I just don't think that this is a very good Chiefs team.
Too soon. Overreaction for now because of what's actually going on in the division. Like, I think I might have answered this differently if the Broncos would have won yesterday. But the Broncos are supposed to be the stiffest competition for them. Now,
well, maybe the Chargers.
It might be, and this comes down to Justin Herbert, really, who I got to see more him and before I trust him. Look, this is the makings of potentially like 10-7 winning that division. I'm not going to rule out the Chiefs in that scenario.
It says, Mew, Bijan Robinson is the best back in the National Football League. He was amazing from the jump last night. He had almost 200 total yards in that matchup against the Vikings. And even in that game, they played Saquon Barkley saying Bijan's next.
Yeah.
Next is now.
I don't think this is an overreaction. I think he does have that potential this year to be the best back in the NFL because he can catch the ball. That's one of the great things about him coming out of college was his ability to catch the ball. We talked about that along with Jahmyr Gibbs, but I look at this going, yeah, you know what? Without they lost the top, what is now the top center in the NFL. He's in Chicago, no longer in Atlanta, yet he hasn't missed a beat being able to rush the football.
I hope so. He's on my fantasy team. But for now, it's an overreaction. He had 24 yards last week. I mean, we go from 1 week, 24 yards, where we never consider this in a ever he's saying that to this week. This is the prime example of an overreaction right now. He's definitely a top five. But Henry and Saquon, if we're doing the right now, this isn't about the future and who you want on your roster long term. This is just the right now. I would still pick Saquon or Henry to be my running back to win a game.
Grit. Jared Goff made Ben Johnson. If we're going to spin it the other way when Goff's struggling, we get to spin it this way when he dazzles like that. 5 touchdowns, 5 incompletions. How's Ben Johnson's offense look with the more dangerous quarterback?
I think it's an overreaction, only because you have the wrong name there. I think it's Dan Campbell made Ben Johnson.
Yeah, overreaction. I can 100% agree with John's take.
There you have it. Those are your overreact gyms, week 2 in the NFL. It's 97.1. You know, replacing a roof isn't something you look forward to. You know, it's going to be expensive, it's a big investment, and it's why choosing the right company matters. For over 30 years, Michigan homeowners have trusted Shaner Roofing. Here's why. Not only are they local experts with a proven track record, but every roof they install comes with a lifetime transferable warranty, which means Your investment is protected for as long as you own the home and even if you sell it. Plus, Shana Roofing has earned a 4.9-star Google rating. No, nobody earns that. That you do that by doing quality work. That kind of trust doesn't happen overnight. It's built on decades of quality work and customer care. So if your roof's aging, I know you don't want to hear it. If it's leaking, you know I'm right. And even if you just want that peace of mind, go to MyMichiganRoof.com. That's MyMichiganRoof.com, powered by Shana Roofing, Michigan's trusted roofing experts.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get to Heather with the news.
Well, Lions fans returned to Eastern Market to tailgate on Sunday, and they were met with more security, more traffic control, some new rules, and less crowds. So the changes, of course, come after last year's tailgate shooting that left two men dead. I mean, we all remember that story. So Detroit police say heightened security will be a new reality at the tailgates this season. They did note that there were 20 more officers at the tailgate on Sunday. There's also new regulations like requiring wristbands for individuals who are parking their car inside Eastern Market. That's new. That's in place to tighten control of the crowd entering the space. They also say tailgating security is expected to get stronger throughout the season. And fans that were in attendance said, yeah, we did notice that there were less people, but they said the vibe was still the same. People were still there to celebrate, and that it didn't change the vibe of the tailgate. So people felt good, felt safe, and had a lot of fun. Tonight, Detroit will be featured or highlighted on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. You're going to want to check it out. So Fallon was in Detroit over the weekend for a special on-the-road taping of his show, and he taped a live episode at the Detroit Opera House, and his guests included Keegan-Michael Key, Cade Cunningham, rapper Common, and then there was also a surprise appearance from Aidan Hutchinson as well, and it was really all centered on Detroit.
That's awesome.
Pretty cool. So the Detroit-centric episode will be on tonight at 11:30. They were also at the game. You might have. There were so many celebrities.
He's waving a flag.
Were so many celebrities at the Lions game as well. So lots of fun. The Emmys were last night, and history was made when 15-year-old Owen Cooper became the youngest ever male Emmy winner in an acting category to win, which is pretty cool. So he was in Adolescence. Did you watch that? It was on Netflix. That also, good show. Good.
Like a series?
Yeah, it's a limited series. So he was named the best supporting actor in the limited series for his portrayal of this boy who is accused of murdering a classmate in Adolescence. Worth the watch. During his speech, he did say, I think tonight proves if you listen and you focus and you step out of your comfort zone, you can achieve anything in life. So some good advice from a young guy. He broke the record previously held by Scott Jacoby, who was 16 when he won in 1973 for that certain summer. So he set a record. Pretty cool. Big winners. The Studio won Best Comedy Series. The Pitt, Best Drama Series. Adolescence won Best Limited Series. The Late Show with Stephen Colbert did win Best Variety Talk Series, despite being canceled by CBS, which aired the Emmys.
Awkward.
So, yeah. Right? A little bit there. So lots of big winners. You can check out the list online if you didn't watch. Let's see. A Michigan teacher has been placed on administrative leave over something they shared on social media about the assassination of Charlie Kirk. This story, I feel like I'm on repeat because it just keeps happening to whether you're an employee at Office Depot or you're a teacher, or it doesn't really matter. You're a host of a show. People are getting fired for
insensitive comments
on social media. And according to the officials, this is with Vassar Public Schools in Michigan's Thumb region. The online post They did not name the teacher, raised concerns in the community. School officials didn't detail the teacher or the post, but they did say the incident is under investigation. They're determining what the next steps are for this particular teacher. A man in Pennsylvania will no longer be able to bring his emotional support alligator to Walmart.
Why not?
Oh, because safety concerns, right, for other shoppers. But this man,
how's he going to shop?
Well, he's not. Not at Walmart. Wow. He's going to have to go somewhere else.
He needs the support. Yeah.
He does. So 60-year-old Wesley Silva and his alligator have been banned from entering Walmart despite previously shopping there together for years, he says. So there is a photo that I saw on social media that got my attention. He's holding alligator.
It. It's not on a leash.
And it's dressed in a sweater with like a harness. It's fabulous.
People that dress their pets crack me up.
And so that went viral. You could see him also pushing this alligator in the cart. He puts him in the cart and walks around, and somebody got a little concerned, expressed their concerns, and then Walmart did say, hey, we do support, you know, bonds that people share with their animals. Like, that's great. We want you to have those bonds, but we don't want you to shop here unless you have like a recognized service animal, which right. an alligator is not. So he's no longer to be there. He's got a lot of other animals maybe he could take, but I highly doubt it. He's got another alligator. He has snakes. He's got a Komodo dragon. He also has five children and several dogs. So he could
bring a kid with him.
He could bring an emotional support kid if he needed to go shopping at Walmart. Maybe that would help.
Dad, I'm here for you.
I'm here. So some people have grown so dependent on ChatGPT or something
AI,
like that,
AI,
that they can no longer write emails or even make decisions on their own. So according to a new survey, 73% of people who use AI chatbots say they're dependent on AI. 25% say they now struggle to write emails without it.
So just close your eyes and just think about having a conversation with someone and then put it in written form.
They can't. They've turned their brains off.
It's bizarre.
Do they know why they're writing the email in the first place? Like, clearly.
Yes.
Why?
Who are you addressing? What is the purpose
Hello,
of this email?
Hello, so-and-so. Yeah. I need this, this, and this. Sincerely, your name. Like, it's so easy. But it's really the younger people who have become more addicted. 78% of Gen Z, 75% of millennial users say they feel dependent, compared to only 67% of Gen X, which is still super high, and 59% of boomers.
Have you guys ever used AI to write, respond to an email?
I have never.
No.
I haven't. I honestly wouldn't even know how to do it.
I don't write that many emails, and most of them are straightforward. Like, I know why I'm writing the person an email, and I write that out in words.
Email drives me nuts.
A full-length email, no, but the suggested, sounds good, okay. I've done that maybe less than five times.
Are you saying like autofill? Because that's different.
No, not autofill. You know how you get an email and like it's like John's.
And then there's like three options at the bottom that says, you know, sounds good, okay.
Oh.
You just click on it and then hit send.
I've done that less than five times.
Okay.
You can kind of do that with text messages too.
Text
it like
yeah.
gives you like options.
I don't know. It kind of drives me nuts when I see that on the email because I'm like, well, I'm just going to type sounds good. And not be told to use it.
I'm with you, John.
Yeah. Sometimes I do want to respond like that way to like when John has a topic of like, oh, the Lions looked terrible last night. Okay, sounds good.
Right.
Way off key and out of tone. Yes. Yeah. All right, that's Heather with the news. We're going to get back into Lions talk today. It is a victory Monday, a much needed victory Monday, and we'll get the phone calls in and your ticket text. Last week we said what was the worst. This week we want to know what was the best. A complete 180. This was good for the soul, good for the team, good for the city. Dan Campbell back in the locker room with his victory speeches. Glad we get to play that today. Let's give that to the people. John, we're back. Victory Mondays.
No, we get the Dan Campbell speech. It's fun. It's so much fun. And to hear the joy, the excitement, but also the recognition of we still got more work to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's only week two, right? We all know that there's more work to do, but the big challenge of Baltimore.
Right. Just like the season wasn't canceled when they lost to Green Bay, they also haven't accomplished anything after beating the Chicago Bears. It's just, at least emotionally, it was needed, right? And we've talked about must win, can't lose. Campbell challenged his guys. He said, we will win. And they didn't respond a little bit. They responded emphatically.
They responded with a game that was a throwback to a year ago. Ben Johnson who? This offense could be just fine. It's going to look the same as way the way it always has. It's going to look that way because it's Dan Campbell's offense. I think that point was driven home yesterday with that performance.
It was, and okay, we know all the disclaimers, right? Last week it was just one game, blah, blah, blah. This week it was the Bears, you know, blah, blah, blah. This was like chicken soup for the Detroit Lions football soul. It just felt good. It warmed your heart. It made you believe in everything that is good with the Detroit Lions. And now you're prepared to go on to bigger tasks.
Pages of responses today on the best part of that game. 50 burger, five touchdowns, no turnovers, no sacks. Defense forces multiple turnovers, stuffs Ben Johnson on a fourth down, two fourth downs they got stops. You got Stumblebum being, you know, mimicked and made fun of in the end zone. Jared Goff's leap, if we're going to call that a leap. You have so many great moments from that game. You have F. Ben Johnson chants, which have become divisive, but there's no shortage of things to feel good about. So we'll collect them as the show goes.
Every time Ben Johnson went for it on fourth down, every Detroit Lions fan, when he didn't come up with a successful conversion, was sitting there going, "You're not Dan Campbell.
You're not
Dan Campbell.
You're not."
And it had nothing to do with it, but it was just the fact that he was going for a fourth down conversion and didn't complete. Especially, I think the most satisfying one was the QB sneak.
Oh, yeah, back-to-back, they try to go Caleb Williams for a yard. Just not tough enough, Ben. Mm-hmm. Calvin, St. Clair Shores, good morning.
Good morning. I just got to say this. The Lions fans are the most fickle fans in America.
Oh, come on.
That loss, I know, John, I'm serious. That loss to Green Bay, it was a lot of callers that called in and was ready to write the Lions off, and it was just one game. That game yesterday showed the NFL that the Lions is here for the future. That's all I'm going to say, buddy.
Okay, Calvin, I see where you're coming from. However, I think the reaction that we had last Monday from fans – was warranted. And then as the week went on, people started to, you know, become a little bit more sane. That's what we do as fans. We overreact on Monday, and then we get through the week, we watch the film, we talk about it, we work our way through all of the stages of sorrow, of a loss. And then you get a chance to go back out there knowing that it was only 1 week. But let's not gloss over the fact that Green Bay is a really good team. They look good against Detroit. They look good against Washington. And it's going to take a lot to overcome and to catch the Green Bay Packers.
And that's your Dallas. So we play Green Bay Thanksgiving Day, right?
Yes, we do.
So if we beat them Thanksgiving Day, what would be the analysis of that game?
Well, it would even up the tiebreaker in the division.
Sure, but it depends what the records are for the two respective teams at that time.
Yeah, I mean,
their schedule is not the Lions' schedule.
No.
And you look at it, and our schedule, maybe it doesn't look as tough as it did at the beginning of the season. Maybe theirs looks a little bit more daunting. I don't know. I'm not going to look at their schedule. I don't really care.
Victory Monday. You're not fickle. It's okay to be upset 1 week ago. It's great, and you should be excited after that performance yesterday. It's 97-1.
Hey, the FanDuel Sportsbook app is your home for all your favorite NFL bets, from yards to touchdowns to who's going to win. With FanDuel, any play can be the play of the game. FanDuel is giving all customers a 50% profit boost token tonight on either game of your choosing. And maybe you want to build a parlay. It's the Bucks at Texans and the Chargers at Raiders. Here's an example. Amika Egbuka, anytime touchdown. Ladd McConkey, over receptions. Justin Herbert, over passing yards. Choose from that or others that are pre-built for you, or hell, make up your own. So make FanDuel your go-to app for every and any snap. Just visit FanDuel.com/971Detroit. That's FanDuel.com/971Detroit. Play your game with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or over and present in Michigan. Opt-in required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable profit boost tokens. Restrictions apply, including any token expiration at max wager amount. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
That familiar sound, Dan Miller's highlights on a victory Monday. That familiar feeling as the Lions offense was unstoppable, dropping 50 points against Ben Johnson's Bears. John, it was everything they weren't the week before. They had no issues being a balanced, explosive offense, running for 6 yards a pop, throwing the ball all over the yard. Jared Goff throws for 5 touchdowns, only had 5 incomplete passes. Sacked 0 times. That goes back to your guys up front, the offensive line.
Well, they did a great job of dictating the tempo of the game. And then when you get a chance to get after Caleb Williams, which happened more in the second half than it did in the first half, you know, props to Calvin Shepard for making some adjustments, which he did against Green Bay. We talked about their adjustments in the second half. You know he eventually is going to throw you the ball, which he did. And he's just ineffective. He may be more ineffective than a lot of other quarterbacks. I'd have to look at, you know, what his numbers are under duress, and you could look at any quarterback and their numbers are going to drop under duress. At 19 to 30, 207 yards, you look at it going, that's not too bad. But there were so many throws that he was trying to make that, you know, those 11 incompletions were not good. And there was some drops as well. It's not all on him.
Let's get to the phones. 248-539-9797. Just what the doctor ordered. John, you put it well. Mm-hmm. Chicken noodle soup for the football soul. Mm-hmm. Paul in Grand Rapids, good morning.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How's it going, Paul?
Good, all right. So I was an emotional moron that called in last week. I owe you guys an apology.
No,
for everybody's job.
You're fine. Oh, wait, you were the guy that called for people to be fired?
Yeah, I was like, fire Campbell, fire Holmes. I was just upset. You know, I think a little bit of a Lion PTSD kicking in. Everything yesterday looked like the Lions team of old. So I'm going to get to what I thought yesterday. And then, John, if you will, I do want to pick your brain on Michigan a little bit, if that's okay.
You bet.
I'd rather you don't.
So the first thing is the offense looked just as good as it did last year. That was awesome. And defensively, they seemed like they made some adjustments. They got to the quarterback more than I thought they would. And game on. I mean, I think this team is just as good as they were last year. And they got a big test in Baltimore coming up. But, you know, I feel 10 times better about it, as should every Lions fan.
Yeah, I mean, what happened on Sunday, it is going to make you feel a lot better. Now, the challenge is, obviously, Green Bay is better than Chicago. So you got to find a way to play better against a good team. You also have to find a way to solve the communication issues when you're on the road. That's going to be the biggest challenge going to Baltimore.
Yeah, I do agree with that. And, John, I do want to pick your brain on Michigan, like I said. So. Yeah. First of all, obviously Underwood is awesome. Do you think now they're going to let him, you know, quote unquote, cook? And how do you think? What do you think their ceiling is, you know, this season? And how do you think they match up, you know, against Nebraska? And do you think they can actually go out and win that game on the road?
Oh, I certainly think they can go out there and win that game on the road. Now it's going to be a matter. It's very similar to what we're talking about with the Lions. They go to Oklahoma, a ruckus environment. And communication, execution wasn't there. Now, having learned more through 3 games than they had through 1 going to Oklahoma, I do think that they're going to put more on the plate of Bryce Underwood. A lot of his successful runs weren't called quarterback runs. They were pocket broke down, and he just goes and makes a play. So I think there's going to be a combination of, yeah, we're going to allow him more in the passing game with the confidence that if it breaks down, he could still make something happen. Where he's going to have to take the next step. That interception he threw was a terrible pass. It was a terrible decision, terrible pass. There was Channing Goodwin was wide open underneath. Would have been a conversion for a first down. That's where you got to make sure as a young player, I understand he wants to make a play and the juices were flowing. Hey, I'm going to go ahead and throw this. I can do no wrong. Well, you did. But it goes back to what I talked about last week, the risk versus reward. There is a risk that he's going to have a play like that. The reward greatly outweighs those risks because what did we learn about him? Oh, hey, he can make people miss. He is a good athlete. You can use him as a weapon in the run game, and he's also a natural passer. Like, he has a great arm. The best thing he did, I thought, was the touchdown pass to Samaj Morgan.
Yes.
Where
second score of the game, right?
Yes. And you look, the tight end Marshall, that pass that he had to him in the Oklahoma game, if he had put a little bit of touch on it and thrown it in a different direction, drawing him more towards the middle field, might have been a completion. Where now all of a sudden, hey, he's under pressure. Left tackle Evan Link has given up a little bit of pressure. He throws that ball out and just lets his receiver run underneath it, go make a play. That's where I thought we saw some the best growth.
Yeah, I mean, Biff, after the game, interim head coach said, we shouldn't be holding this guy back. Learn the lesson from Oklahoma. Let him cut it loose.
Yep.
And there are risks. Like, look what Florida did with DJ Lagway. He's in his second year, and they let him air it out against LSU. And he threw five interceptions, and it was ugly. And he arguably cost them that game. But I think they will go down swinging with their guy time after time because the talent's there, and you need these reps to unlock that next gear. And that's what Michigan's going to find out when they go on the road to Nebraska next week.
Yep.
1.5 favorites. See if they can make the adjustment. Ticket text, 248-539-9797. Best part of that Lions win. Says, guys, I'm going to enjoy today as much as I hated last Monday. Today's even better when you curb stomped your ex-OC who took a division rival job and then started chirping. Maybe Campbell and Goff made Ben Johnson after all. Mark in Grand Rapids. Text says, I enjoyed the game Sunday, but I don't understand the Ben Johnson vitriol and hate. He helped make this team relevant for the first time in a long time. He did something that any other coordinator would do, turn into a head coach. He didn't spurn us. He got a promotion. I don't get the hate.
Okay. Well, you're much more logical than most other football fans.
You know, fans are ready for those chants. Yeah. F Ben Johnson. We'll talk about that. Fair or foul. Goff didn't like it. We'll do it at 8 o'clock. Texter says, the best thing from the game? The universe confirming the double-digit disco is back on the table. Maybe believe the signs. Tom and Flat Rock.
Well, they're off this week.
They're off this week, so don't expect a double-digit win in Baltimore. But I think the disco is an option moving forward, John. If we're going to have an offense that looks like that on a given week.
Only you. Only you.
Boogie Wonderland. All right. We'll get more of your phone calls, 97.1.
Value-driven banking begins with First Merchants Bank. When I have questions about my finances, I turn to my bank, and that's First Merchants Bank. I know that their attentive local bankers are 100% interested in listening to my situation and in helping me find the answers that I need. First Merchants doesn't provide cookie-cutter solutions or check-off boxes when it comes to financial advice. They take the time to learn about my life and my personal financial goals and work with me to build a plan that fits my situation. There's a lot of I, me, my in there. That's because First Merchants Bank really cares. They see me as an individual, not just as a number on a spreadsheet, and they're going to do all they can to help their customers and communities succeed. You can count on that since First Merchants Bank is staffed by local bankers who know and are passionate about the needs of the local community because it's their community as well. It's where they live and they work, and we all have to work together to help our communities continue to prosper. To get started on your personalized financial solution today, you can visit them at firstmerchants.com. That's firstmerchants.com. First Merchants Bank, member FDIC.
No shortage of good stuff. Needed to see it.
Whew. Sigh of relief, breath of fresh air, whatever analogy you want to use, it did feel good.
180 from the show we did a week ago, where we were asking you, what was the worst of a really bad day? Now we get the chance to ask you, what was the best of a really great day? Again, they score 50 points, stick it to Ben Johnson. To me, the best part was you were able to drive home and drill the point that this is Dan Campbell's offense, because it looked just like last year. It was balanced. It was explosive. They didn't start the game dominant on the ground. They worked backwards. Hard play action, explosives down the field, and then grinding them down, running for 6 yards a carry for almost 200 yards. Jared Goff had 5 incomplete passes, sacked 0 times, and it goes all the way back to the offensive line. John, I don't know if you've done like a deeper dive, and I know we'll have TJ coming in at 9 o'clock. Why did the line look that much better 1 week to the next, specifically the middle three?
I use this analogy all the time, and I know you've quoted me on it. Elephants on parade. You all have to be operating at the same level, doing the same thing. Now, you can have different talent levels. Obviously, they do. They've got Tate Ratledge playing next to Penei Sewell, right? Different levels. But you've got to be on the same page. And we heard Taylor Decker talk about it on the, you know, coming out third down, all of a sudden unblocked player at the point of attack. Well, what happened? 2 guys are going one way, 3 guys are going another. That's what happens up front when you don't have 5 guys that are on the same page. And now all of a sudden you turn it 1 week and it is, and I'm going to put most of it on playing at home where you actually have that verbal communication. And you need a lot of that when you have young players. It's communicate, over-communicate, and then communicate some more so that everybody is doing the right thing. They're all seeing the same thing. And Jared Goff gets to the line of scrimmage right. We know that he's got the brain power to redirect protection, change the play at the line of scrimmage, but it takes processing time for those young players. All of a sudden, it's not, hey, with Ragnow and Zeitler, Goff says something and boom, I know what I'm doing right away. Now all of a sudden, you get to the line of scrimmage and with Mahogany and Ratledge, and also with Glasgow playing a different position, now he could process quicker, but it's all of a sudden, hey, make the call and then set hut. You've got to process that quickly. I think that they processed quicker, they communicated better, and that was the biggest advantage that they had. And I mean, pad level, we know those guys can do it. We saw Mahogany do it twice last year. They can do it. But it's going to have to, they're going to have to ramp up their development to be able to do it on the road.
Yeah, I haven't done like a rewatch or a deeper dive, but I did try to make a point of watching a little more of the interior of the line just because I think it's paramount that they get that group right, John. And I saw Mahogany moving dudes on their second touchdown. Graham Glasgow, they get that pass down to the one, does a great job as a center blocking a couple guys, yeah, passing dudes off with stunts on the D-line. And him and Ratledge had the big push at the 1 yard line. It doesn't have to be a big push at the goal line, but they got a surge, which provided the oomph for David Montgomery. I really liked what I saw.
Yeah, your world changes on, you know, second and goal from the one, third and goal, fourth and goal from the one. It's different than it is, hey, you know, fourth and one on the 50 yard line. Your world changes. That's a completely different experience. And I like that they were better in that. Their pad level is good. And here's the biggest difference, I think, is you watch the game against Green Bay versus the game against Chicago. Those two guys are not on the ground as much. Now, you're going to get on the ground at sometimes because you got to cut guys. You're pancaking guys. Sometimes you get knocked on your can. They're not on the ground as much in week two as they were in week one. You can't block anybody when you're on the ground. And I thought that their balance in pass protection was better. They did a better job of passing off games. They were on the same level. I talked about the level of you know, performance. But when you're talking about changing and passing off games, if I'm a right guard and a right tackle, if I'm not on the same level, now all of a sudden that stresses Penei Sewell because he's got to stay with the guy instead of passing him off to that guard. You got to stay with him. That makes his life tougher. And I mentioned it last week. I didn't think he played up to the level of that Penei Sewell should play.
Right.
Part of that is you've got two guards, the one next to him, Ratledge, that's not performing or doing the things that will help him or that will help Graham. In this game, it was a much better level.
Some ticket text, 248-539-9797. 3 best moments. When Chicago had to come back on the field when they thought the half was over. When they showed Eminem and Barry on the Jumbotron together. Mm-hmm. For the Aiden sack, and the crowd went crazy for all 3 of those moments, Martin in Shelby. Dan Campbell's Who's Your Daddy moment with Ben Johnson was the highlight, Chris in St. Clair Shores. How about these notes on the offense yesterday, John? It was the first time in franchise history the Lions produced a game with at least 500 yards of offense, 5 passing touchdowns, and 2 rushing touchdowns. And if you think that's a little too cute, let's just simplify it. They set a franchise record with 8.8 yards per play. Mm-hmm. A better day than any day Ben Johnson ran the offense.
Well, and you think about just the explosive plays that they had. Obviously, we know the 2 by Jamison Williams. Those were great. But to have a 54-yard average, he only caught 2 balls. Longest one was 64 yards. And then you've got long in receiving of a 34-yard catch by Amon-Ra St. Brown, a 29-yard catch by Tesla. Anytime you're in double digits, and you also have Brock Wright, Sam Laporta, Khalif Raymond, all with catches over 10 yards. Like, I mean, Jahmyr Gibbs with that 42-yard run.
Yep.
David Montgomery had another 18-yard run. Like, explosive plays, 10-plus yards plays. Those were all there for this offense.
Let's get some of your thoughts on the phones. Chris and Ypsilanti, good morning out of Victory Monday.
Good morning, boys. Love Victory Monday. Real quick point. I called last week to say, look, the sky's not falling. I think the best part about yesterday's win is that you can't discount what the Lions did on offense today, because the Bears defense, despite allowing 50 points, that defense is actually stacked. Jalen Johnson played yesterday. TJ Edwards played yesterday. They have Jaquan Brisker and Kevin Byard at the safety position. Montez Sweat and Osa Odingbo are dudes, and the Lions made it look easy against the same Bears defense that had J.J. McCarthy running for his life for 3 quarters of that first Monday night game. I think the lazy point is to say that, well, it's just the Bears doesn't count. No, 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 no. That's a good Bears defense. The Lions are really good on offense. Now, the other lazy point that I think people will say is that, oh, well, Green Bay must be in another stratosphere. No, 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 no. I called last week to say the Lions and the Packers are very evenly matched. The Packers caught the Lions on a day where their O-line had probably the worst day that they're going to have all year. And, John, I'm glad you've been making that point earlier. The O-line had a bad day last week. Thanksgiving will be different. I don't know if we'll win, but it'll be different. The Lions are legit. They're a top-3 team in the conference, and that vindication was the sweetest justice. That's it.
Well, to his point about the Bears' defense, they do have good players on defense. The Bears' defense has never been the question. It's always been about their offense. And let's go back to when Ben Johnson left and Aaron Glenn left. We all were claiming that we wanted Dennis Allen to be the DC here. Ben Johnson snapped him up before Dan had said done anything with the defensive coordinator position. If he was here, people would have been cheering. They would not have been as much concerned about the defense because he had been a defensive coordinator before. He had been a head coach, and in New Orleans, it wasn't, again, a question about the defense.
Right.
So to be able to do that to Dennis Allen more than Ben Johnson, that to me seems like, okay, that's a good performance by this offense.
I like Chris. I remember his call from a week ago. I think it's a little flimsy to go, well, if they shut down J.J. McCarthy, they must be a good defense. Because J.J. McCarthy played his second start last night, and it was dreadful.
Yeah.
I'm not taking anything away from the Lions' win. I don't care who you play. Drop 50 points. Drop them on the table like that. Do everything you want. That was the statement that the Lions' offense needed. He used the word vindication. You want to feel vindicated that you didn't need Ben Johnson, that your offense is right. Going to be just fine without him. And they had the best day they've had with or without Ben Johnson in the Dan Campbell era. I got a couple ticket texts on the chance. We are going to mix in that conversation in the next hour here. 2 different points of view. First ticket text says, I was at that game with my 12-year-old son, and I think the foul chants against Ben Johnson were a bad look for the city. We have to have more class than that, John in Orchard Lake. Whereas Mike in Port Huron says, I know the coaches and players disagree, but that chant was great. If he had just gone to Chicago, fine, but he was smug and arrogant about it. Fair or foul, the F. Ben Johnson chants. We'll get to that in the next hour as well. It's 97.1.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.